This is The Fantasy Show with Sho Ali and Matt Marchese on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's Sunday morning, and you know what that means. It's time for The Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sho Ali, Matt Marchese with you. Good morning, everyone. Hope you all had a nice snooze on Saturday evening. Got my venti coffee ready to get us through the morning. So we get set for two more NFL divisional round games. The last two, actually, of the round before the AFC and NFC championship games next weekend. The top two seeds moving on after yesterday. And relatively speaking, convincing wins. We'll get to those in a couple of minutes. Top of the next hour, we'll be joined by Bob Harris, host at SiriusXM Fantasy, senior editor at footballdiehards.com, and of course, Fantasy Sports Writers Association Hall of Famer. So he'll join us at 9 a.m. Eastern. We'll take a look ahead at some early draft strategies for the 2023 season with him. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll wrap up on the tight ends from this year compared to our preseason predictions from early September. So the last couple of weeks, we've gotten to the QBs, the running backs, the wide receivers. Wrap up on that with tight ends straight ahead. Mr. Marchese, how are you this morning, first of all? Have the butterflies from Bills-Dolphins last weekend, have they dissipated at all in advance of Joe Cool coming to Orchard Park later today?
Oh, no, it's gotten worse. We are in red alert right now, because even though the Bengals are down two offensive linemen, I still get nervous for every Bills game, because let's face it, Sho, I'm a Bills fan, and we've had a lot of bad things happen. So I'm not that I'm waiting to be let down, because that would be a bad way to put it, because I do think they're going to have a really good game today. But there's always that thought in the back of your mind, much like there was with 13 seconds left in last year's divisional game between the Chiefs and Bills. There's always that thing in the back of your head that goes, you know, they still could lose this thing. And that's exactly the thought that I had last week. Last week was very, very, very hard to deal with. At one point, I actually got up off the couch. I threw my hat and went, I don't think my heart can take this anymore. To which I then returned not 30 seconds later back to the couch for pain. So, yeah, I mean, the butterflies are, they're always there when the Bills play in the playoffs. I mean, it hasn't been all that often over the last 20 years, but I mean, we managed to push through. But it should be an interesting game today. I mean, I saw that the Bills are 6-point favorites, and that felt like a lot, but it's going to be the fact that we get to watch Joe Burrow and Josh Allen in a playoff game, I think is quite the treat.
You know, I am looking forward to it. I do think that much like last year, Mahomes Allen was a treat, and I think Burrow Allen will also be a treat today. I do agree with you, though. I mean, look, the Bills got to clean some stuff up after what we saw last weekend. I have submitted over the course of the week, though, that of all teams, and I guess you'd probably be able to squeeze in the Patriots and Jets into such a conversation as well, but obviously we're talking about the Dolphins since that's who they played last week. But just that when you play a team three times over the course of a season, and one team knows you so well from being inside that division that it is hard to surprise teams like that. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of where I fall in. Like, I'm not saying that it's solely because of these two teams, Bills, Dolphins, being in the AFC East is why it was a tight one for the Bills and why the Dolphins were able to take guys by surprise and Skylar Thompson had some success and so on and so forth, whatever you want to go down. I do think that at least to a certain degree, that is why the Bills struggled last week, only because there's a degree of familiarity there that you can't beat when it comes to other teams. Now, I'm sure it'll be a tight one again today, and the Bengals obviously don't play in the same division as the Bills do, but I don't know. I think there's something there when it comes to teams playing for the third time in a single season.
And I don't disagree with that at all. Especially, like, I always go into it, if you play in a divisional opponent in the playoffs, that if you've beaten them twice in the season, it is the third time is always the hardest. And as it pertains to the Bills and specifically the Dolphins last week, I think the biggest thing with the Bills, and especially it's been this season, and we've seen it even last year, they play down to their opponents. It's really not pretty. Like, let's not forget, they they lost to the Falcons and the Jags last year. Like, it wasn't good. Or maybe it was the Jags 2 years ago. Anyway, regardless, they sucked. And they play up to their opponents. We saw that, you know, when they beat up on the Rams in week one, and they've beaten the Chiefs already. I mean, so playing down to opponents is something that the Bills have an issue with. And I felt like, you know what happens. You go in and there's Skylar Thompson, and you're like, he's not very good. We got this one in the bag. And then the Bills proceed to turn the ball over way too many times like they normally do. And the game becomes a lot more difficult than it probably should be. I just don't think that that's going to be the case today. I hope it's not, because I have people coming over, and I don't think people want to see that side of me, because it gets really ugly when things get ugly for the Bills.
It's really funny. I remember I had the same conversation with Andy last year, and he told me he basically never watches any games with other people. Like, it's only his dad, and that's it. Because I wanted to ask him, I'm like, hey, why don't we watch like a Patriots Browns games together? And he abjectly refused, because he said I wouldn't like him anymore. We wouldn't be friends anymore after such a game. So, you know what? I totally believe it. I 1000% believe it. All right, did you, Matt, I forget, you grew up a Leafs fan as well, right?
Oh yeah.
So, okay, which more pain, Leafs or Bills? where do you go?
Ooh, I think with the Leafs, I've just come to expect it. And when I look at them, I don't say like, that's one of the best teams in the league. Whereas right. The Bills, like, I actually have legitimate expectations, because they've won playoff games in the last 3 years, where the Leafs haven't won a series, you know, since I was whatever I was, 13 or 14 years old. That's a long time. But it's funny though. I don't know what it is. I think it's just because it's the one game too, right? That's why it's even more painful, I think, when you lose, is it's just one game, and that's the only opportunity you have in the NFL. Whereas in the NHL, it's like, oh, it's a 7-game series. I got a shot here. Like, you know, you lose game one, okay, it's not the end of the world, right? So I think that's part of it as well.
I think that's fair. I was just curious. I went to bed last night basically right after, or just shortly after, the Leafs got downed by Pitlick, you know, to overtime by the by the Montreal Canadiens. I thought, gosh, didn't I just see the Leafs beat the Jets 4-1 in a relatively dominant win? What, another team that had been playing pretty well, and then they lose to the Habs in Montreal of all places. Ugh, I don't know. At least the Flames beat the Tampa Bay Lightning by a relatively convincing amount. So the Leafs do pick up a point. So I'll take silver linings on a Saturday night, especially on hockey. I guess hockey weekend in Owen Sound as well, which was a big, pretty big success, I would say. That continues today as well with some festivities. I do want to get to some of the NFL games from yesterday as well, Matt. I mentioned it before. Chiefs and Jaguars, the first game on the schedule, and Eagles-Giants, the second game. It's funny, I was doing a couple of shows this week in the evening, some Sportsnet Tonights, and all week, I you know, the divisional round has long given us some absolutely classic games. We were just talking about one of them in part in Chiefs-Bills last weekend. That's an instant class, or last year, pardon me, on this weekend. That's an instant classic, I think, for a lot of people. And I was kind of hoping we would get some of those again this weekend. Now, look, there's still two games left to go today. Bills-Bengals, we'll talk about that more at the bottom of the next hour. And, of course, Cowboys-49ers, which I really think is the matchup that has the most juice for me is that one. But I was kind of hoping there'd be some things kind of from yesterday's games. And in the end, the two number one seeds, they end up moving on. And if not for an injury to Patrick Mahomes' ankle in the first half, it probably would have been even more convincing, it felt like, for the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, Chad Henne came in and leads, what, like a 98-yard drive for a touchdown immediately after Patrick Mahomes gets put on the shelf for the first half. He did come back out, and the Chiefs did win that game, of course, but certainly felt like they leaned on Isaiah Pacheco in the running game a little more. But boy, the Chiefs winning 27-20, and the Jaguars, I thought they did a decent enough job, but I mean, in the end, it was tough for them to come close. It was really 27-17 until the last, what, like 20, 15 seconds or so, and they kicked a field goal. So the backdoor cover for me, as someone who actually for the first time in the entire season actually laid a couple dollars down on the Jags to cover, it did actually come through. So I'll take it when I can.
Yeah, I definitely live bet the Jags when Patrick Mahomes got hurt at +7.5. Now, that game, and I think Patrick Mahomes is going to have an MRI today to determine the severity of that injury, but that looks like a bad one. Like, that looks like high ankle sprain. And to be honest with you, I'm kind of surprised that he made his way back onto the field yesterday, especially because you mentioned, like, Chad Henne looked just fine. Thank you very much. And it turned out that, you know, Patrick Mahomes hobbled more than once, maybe whether it be handing off the ball or whatever it was, but moving was not a strong suit for him yesterday after the ankle injury. And the beneficiary of it was Travis Kelce, who had 14 catches for 98 yards and added 2 scores. I mean, we had the conversation last week about Travis Kelce and how worried we are about Travis Kelce. And I know some people are like, see, I told you Travis Kelce's still good. Nobody's saying he's not good, but and we'll ask Bob Harris this question about playoff performances and how it determines draft slotting next year. But Travis Kelce's 14 catches came on an average of 7 yards per catch. And that, for me, when I look at how the play calling became, and then it was a lot of, you know, quick dump offs to Travis Kelce. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but I think sometimes you get caught up in the moment, and sometimes you need to just look back and say, okay, hold on, why did this happen? Like, do we think that Travis Kelce has 14 catches if Patrick Mahomes can move around in the pocket? Probably not. So, but on the Jags side of things, I mean, if you have a hobbled Patrick Mahomes, you should be able to win that game. You should. And the fact that they didn't shows us, and unsurprisingly, that they've got more work to do here. The Jags offensively just looked very disjointed yesterday. I know that the interception that Trevor Lawrence threw at the end, it was a great play by Watson. Like, that was a fantastic catch. But, you know, there was a lot of pressure there, and the offensive line just didn't do it for me yesterday for Trevor Lawrence. And then the Agnew fumble was ridiculous. And that's a play that it's probably to Christian Kirk if he's on the field. I believe Christian Kirk was not injured on that particular play. So, I mean, lots went wrong for the Jags, but they also pulled off one of the greatest comebacks in NFL history. So there's stuff to build on. But as we look into next week, whoever the Chiefs play, I would assume it's going to be with a hobbled or not available Patrick Mahomes.
Well, I mean, he has the high ankle sprain, which is what Ian Rappaport had reported during the game yesterday. And look, we've talked about this a lot, honestly, over the course of the entire season. But boy, high ankle sprains, like, even if he does play, like you said, he is not going to be 100%. Like, high ankle sprains, I feel like take what, a month? Maybe a little bit more to heal, at least. Yeah, like
at least a month.
If you're talking about 100% health, maybe even 2 months, I would say. And as we know in football, guys play through things, and you know, it's sometimes you can mask it to different degrees. But I do feel as though Patrick Mahomes, part of his game, and this is not certainly not a hot take by any means, but his strength, and we saw it kind of go away against the Jacksonville Jaguars. But a part of it is being able to move around outside the pocket, extend plays as needed, right? So I don't know. I think I am curious to see, even if he does suit up, and I bet he does, even if he does suit up next weekend, he is, the game plan is going to be a lot different, to the point where both Isaiah Pacheco and Jerick McKinnon are probably going to be used more than you probably thought they would in the actual run game. And we saw that this past Saturday as well. 12 carries, 95 yards for Pacheco, 11 carries, 25 yards for Jerick McKinnon, and they weren't used too much in the passing game. But again, it is because these the typical kinds of plays we had seen where Mahomes runs around and then just kind of backhands a ball down the field to Jerick McKinnon, who runs for like a 59-yard touchdown. that aspect of the offense wasn't 100% there yesterday, so we'll see if it does come back by next weekend. I got to say, though, his ankle, Matt, that injury is going to be covered – more than any event in the history of the world, like more than the moon landing, more than Twitter's demise, like literally anything, nothing will be covered more than whatever Patrick Mahomes' ankle looks like this week. Like Andy Reid's going to be asked about that, I dare say, every single day from now until the time they take they kick off the first snap next weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be covered like a presidential election.
Yeah.
It's good, and you want to be the first one who has the scoop, right? On the game plan specifically, like they couldn't even run screens because Patrick Mahomes. If it happened on his left leg, we'd be having a different conversation. But the fact that it happened on his right leg, which is his back leg, that's a problem for right-handed throwing players. That's just the reality of it, and. The game plan specifically, I think we're going to see a ton of Travis Kelce. Like the other guy that we saw a bunch of was Kadarius Toney. He had 5 catches for 36 yards, and he also had the 1 carry for 14 yards. Like I don't want to say dink and dunk because Patrick Mahomes can still throw the ball deep. It's whether he has the time and space to do so. But I think we're going to see a lot of short passing, a lot of the run game, like you mentioned, for the Chiefs next week, regardless of the opponent. And the other thing that happens with that is for teams that are trying to defend it, it's not a lot of time for you to get to the quarterback. So you better be in tight coverage all game, because if you can manage to even get another half second where Mahomes has to hold on to the ball and you can add that pressure, can't really go anywhere on one leg. So it's going to be really interesting to see how teams scheme against that, and even more so how the Chiefs scheme for pressure that's going to be coming, because whether it's the Bills or whether it's the Chiefs, they're going to be able to get some sort of a pass rush. It's just whether or not they can get to him before he throws the ball, because that was a big part of their game yesterday. When we look, Travis Kelce, he had more catches than all other Chiefs combined yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
There were 27 completions in the game. Kelce had 14. The rest of the team had 13.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. I was just looking ahead at some of these other statistics. Like I said, 12 carries for Pacheco, 11 for McKinnon, 14 catches for Kelce. And like you said, 13 for basically everyone else, which is wild. You know, when you look at Pacheco specifically, Matt, and again, I know we're going to talk to Bob Harris about this at the top of the next hour, in the sense of what, if any, or how, if any at all, does your opinion change based on playoff performances? And I dare say it did change. The Gabe Davis playoff performance from last year on this same weekend did probably change some people's opinions of him in the actual NFL, or pardon me, in your fantasy playoff draft, so on, you know, as we got into the rest of the playoffs, people doing DFS lineups, paying up for him in your actual fantasy drafts before the regular season starts in August or September. Gabe Davis crept up fantasy draft boards. I wonder, what do you do with the Chiefs running back position in drafts next year? Like, let's just say, for the sake of argument, it is Jerick McKinnon and it is Isaiah Pacheco as the guys who are largely doing the body of the work, the bulk of the work for the Kansas City Chiefs next year with Patrick Mahomes. Like, what round pick do you spend on like Chiefs running back, knowing that they are in fact two people? What kind of investment do you spend on them right now? Because I still feel, as talented as Isaiah Pacheco is, and I really do think he is, like if he was a featured running back, like the Browns use Nick Chubb, for example, I really believe he would be one of the top 5 running backs in the NFL, just because he runs so, he's just a physical runner. You know, and it's not really like a Derrick Henry style, because few
he's
people
angry.
Can be, yeah, that's what it is. Like few people can be compared to Derrick Henry, but he just seeks out contact, and I just would love to see him used more. You'll probably never see that in a Patrick Mahomes led offense, just because that's just the, when you have someone like Patrick Mahomes, you let the guy throw the ball, right? So I do wonder, like, what kind of draft capital do you spend on a Pacheco next year?
So just for our, I mean, let's assume that Jerick McKinnon is back He's on a he was on a 1 year deal, but Patrick Mahomes apparently specifically asked for Jerick McKinnon. So that kind of tells me a lot that Jerick McKinnon is probably back next year. So especially Pacheco, like he's been really successful since taking over that lead role, and he's been impressive when he runs. Like I've never seen a guy who gets up after a first down and is just, he's so violent afterwards. Like after the play is over, he's shaking his head and his arms are flailing everywhere. Like it's actually hilarious to watch. But when it comes down to next year, you know, Pacheco probably goes around like RB between 25 and probably 30. And that's, it's probably too low. And it's only because of what you mentioned, like how much of his success this year was because, you know, the Chiefs were ahead in games, or how, like, I don't even know how many touchdowns he has this season, but like, that's going to be, that's something that it's hard to determine what's going to happen next season. But I think it's one of those situations where, like, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I'm assuming that he's not back next year. I know they invested the draft capital in him, but I'm assuming he's not back next year. Like, he's a cut candidate for me. So, but we've seen how the Chiefs have kind of gone through running backs since Kareem Hunt left. And Pacheco has been the most successful back since Kareem Hunt. So I feel like it's probably around RB25, but I feel like everybody's going to say at the end of the year, man, we probably should have drafted him higher. It's all, and this is in large part because you look at the other guys that are available. Like if you were to go down the list, you'd probably get to Pacheco at 25 and be like, yeah, that's probably right. But he has, like, there's so much variance there that, you know, if they just determine at some point that, oh, he's just not good enough, then he falls out of favor. But there's also the variance of he could be a top 15 back because of the offense he plays in.
Where do you draft Travis Etienne? Like, if someone was like, Matt, you have a choice to invest a third round pick on Travis Etienne, let's say a middle to back end third round pick on Etienne next year, do you do it?
Ooh, I probably do. I probably do, okay. In PPR, because I think that I do feel like they're going to use him a little bit more in the passing game, or at least they should. He's really good in that aspect. But it's funny that you say that, because I'm just thinking, like, what are the odds that Isaiah Pacheco finishes ahead of Travis Etienne next year?
I mean, it's not impossible, right?
It's far from impossible. Like, Etienne got the starting gig a little bit later, just because James Robinson had a good start to the year. They trade him, and then Etienne blows up. But Travis Etienne finished as RB16. So it's not as if once he took over the starting job that, like, he was great, but he took over the starting job by like week 4 or 5.
Yeah, it was
not as if he didn't have some runway.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not as if he didn't have some runway. And there were some games in there that he wasn't good. I mean, he did get hurt in one game, but other guys missed time too, and they still managed to finish, you know, in the top 12. So, I mean, there is, oh, man. I think I probably would with a back-end third, only because at that point, I think there's going to be a ton of running backs off the board, right? Because everybody kind of looks at the situation and goes, well, there's a bunch of wide receivers, so let's load up on running backs early. That's a lot of people's strategies. And maybe that changes because of how good elite wide receivers have become and how reliable they've been, and how what's the word I'm looking for? Oh my God. These early morning shows are killer for my vocabulary. How volatile the running back position has been there, Matt, you got it. Way to go. Way to use that new brain of yours. Because that position's become so volatile, I think that's part of the conversation as well. And honestly, show, like, Jamichael Hasty is there in Jacksonville right now. I don't think he's going to be back next year, because I do wonder if they bring in another veteran running back, one that has some pass blocking ability and some pass catching chops, because they just want to add weapons to this offense. The other guy on Jacksonville that, and I want to ask Bob Harris about this, Calvin Ridley can apply for reinstatement on February 15th.
Right.
I would be very curious to see what he thinks of him, especially after missing, like, you know, basically 2 years without playing football.
The Calvin Ridley effect on a Doug Peterson Jacksonville Jaguars offense will be fascinating because, again, after not playing football for a long time, that it'll be hard to come back in and immediately be a difference maker. But his mere presence alone will, I'm sure, shake things up. Like, even if everyone on that Jacksonville offense returns, including Evan Engram, and we'll talk about the tight ends in a couple of minutes. But, you know, even if he does return, if Ridley is out there, there's a couple less targets per game to go around for everyone. And I don't think that's necessarily going to affect Travis Etienne of all people because he was basically non-existent in the passing game. But it is, I am curious to see what that looks like. It might be a case where the person who gets affected by this the most will essentially just be Trevor Lawrence. And obviously you're not going to complain too much about that because there's a chance he's going to be, I think he already kind of quote unquote broke out this year as a QB just because he was so much better in his second go around as a QB versus his rookie year. But hey, I am curious to see what the Ridley effect on that offense will be. Before we take a break, I do want to get to the Eagles Giants game. And
we have to.
Yeah, we're not going to spend too much time on this one. 38-7 was the final. This game was over before the end of this, like maybe even the middle of the second quarter. Like, as good as Daniel Jones played against the Vikings last week, he was terrible. Like he was terrible this weekend. The Eagles had a great game plan for him. Good for Nick Sirianni, who also managed to get an F-bomb in on live television. So good for Nick. Good for him. But hey, look, I mean, they executed the game plan perfectly. They pounded the Giants with runs. Kenneth Gainwell had 12 carries for over 100 yards and a touchdown. Miles Sanders had 17 carries for 90 yards. Jalen Hurts himself had 9 carries for 34 yards and a touchdown. Boston Scott had 6 carries for 32 yards and a touchdown. So the
inevitable game, Boston, yeah, Scott against the Giants. The inevitable. That's 19 touchdowns in 11 career games against the Giants.
I was never sure if like things like that, if there's really like some correlation causation type stuff, but I was listening to actually JD's show on I think it was on Friday. It was the last show of the week, and I think he laid some money down on Boston Scott. So I took a Boston Scott anytime TD solely because of JD, and it happened. So I'll have to text him to let him know that that worked out pretty well. Devontae Smith, 6 receptions, 61 yards and a touchdown. He led the Eagles in receptions and yards. Dallas Goedert, 5 catches, 58 yards and a touchdown as well. AJ Brown, he got locked up by Adoree Jackson, but I mean, Jackson did the same thing to Justin Jefferson last week, so it's not a huge shock. But I mean, look, the Eagles were the number one seed and the best team in arguably the entire NFL for a large chunk of the season for a reason, and then they showed it by absolutely waxing the New York Giants. I mean, you know, we talk about playoff expectations, Matt, and how playoff performances could, in theory, change your perception of these players come draft time. We had that conversation about Travis Kelce. I mentioned Gabe Davis last year. We'll continue to have that conversation with Bob Harris in about 30 minutes. But, I mean, you know, you and I were heaping praise, and so were a lot of people on Isaiah Hodgins last week. The man had 1 catch for 3 yards yesterday. That just goes to show you the real up-and-down nature of these things.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. Kind of took away a talking point. But I still think there's a conversation to be had about Isaiah Hodgins because he was really good down the stretch. But yeah, that game, for me, the game was over when the Giants decided to go for it on 4th and 8. They were at just a little bit ahead of midfield. And I want to say the score was only 7-0 at that point. And for me to go for it there on 4th, like if you're 4th and 2, then I get it. But you can't give the Giants that the Eagles that kind of field position the way that their offense has been going, because their offense has been electric all year. And the way they ran the ball yesterday was insanely impressive. Gainwell had a few big runs. Sanders was really good just consistently all game. But The Giants, you know, yesterday's game just showed us that they need to add to that wide receiver room, because as much as Isaiah Hodgins was good, you know, Richie James had a good day, but Richie James is not a receiver that you should be relying on. Darius Slayton, I mean, he had some really good weeks this year, but he was also the 5th wide receiver on the depth chart at one point this season. They're going to get Wandale Robinson back from the torn ACL, and he's really started to play well before he got hurt. And then I'm assuming they're going to either bring in a free agent wide receiver. I mean, unless they have a little bit of PTSD from the Kenny Golladay contract, but they should be adding a wide receiver. I would assume that it's going to be in the draft. I think that they're going to spend some draft capital on a wide receiver, bring in, you know, one of the top guys, because I assume that Daniel Jones earned himself another contract. He is a free agent, but I am assuming he earned himself a contract, and that's going to be basically down to Brian Daboll and if he wants to continue to work with Daniel Jones. I don't think the Giants at this point in their development are going to look to bring, they're not going to look to bring in a younger quarterback. If they don't bring back Daniel Jones, then maybe it's a Derek Carr type situation or whatever, but it's not going to be another young quarterback. And so with that being said, they're going to have to bring in some wide receiver help because that group is just not good enough. It's probably one of the worst when you look at in terms of top end talent in the entire league. And they managed to make the playoffs with it because Daniel Jones was really good. The other question about this Giants team is Saquon Barkley coming back? Because he's also a free agent. He did not get an extension. They said they want to bring him back, but I'd be curious to see how much they're willing to sink into the running back position. Barkley looked like he got hurt in yesterday's game, but he was really good when he did get the ball in his hands. Listen, we know how good Saquon Barkley is, and wherever he, like, he would be a really interesting case show on a landing spot affecting draft capital. Because if he stays with the Giants, he's probably a top five pick.
Sure.
Top six. But if he goes to a different team, like, I'm trying to think of who needs a running back right now. Like, here's an example. If the Buffalo Bills thought that Saquon Barkley was the difference between them making, let's say, the AFC Championship and them winning a Super Bowl, does that change his draft capital for you? I would assume it does.
What if he was a Carolina Panther?
Well, I don't know. They were giving their running backs like 38 carries.
That's what I mean. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, what if they decide Barkley is the guy over like Deontay Foreman or something?
Yeah, like, and that's... for me, that would depend on who the quarterback is.
Yeah, that's true.
In Carolina, right? So if we look at established situations, I mean, like, I don't want to say if he went to the Chiefs because that would be too easy. Yes, he would still be a top five pick. But, like, if he went to – I know this is great radio. If he went to Miami.
Yeah, Miami's going to be
one of my – top five pick, right?
They're one of my favorite landing spots for basically any free agent running back. Like, if Tony Pollard – does not re-sign, and he goes to Miami, I like it. If Miles Sanders does not re-sign, goes to Miami, honestly, still pretty much like it. Saquon Barkley is that guy too. Probably the best option, but yeah, whichever running back lands in Miami, I'm fascinated to see what their draft capital would look like. It would probably be relatively similar to Devontae Adams in the sense of Adams is the guy who was drafted super highly year after year after year in Green Bay, goes to Vegas, and then still gets drafted like relatively highly. Like, I know he was going in end of the first round, beginning of the second round for a lot of leagues, and he was a pretty good receiver this year. He disappeared some weeks, but I mean, that's less on him and more on the game plan or more on Derek Carr. So who knows? Maybe that changes. Maybe Tom Brady is throwing passes to Devontae Adams next year in Vegas. Before we take a quick break here, Matt, and get to the tight ends, real quick, I mentioned Miles Sanders. Let's say Miles Sanders does depart. Let's say he does not re-sign in Philly, or the Eagles just feel as though the way the offense is constructed, you can get replacement production from virtually anyone. Let's say Kenneth Gainwell becomes that guy. Are you buying Kenneth Gainwell's production? Not just from last night, but just what we have seen in spurts from him as Sanders' backup, or like the 1B to his 1A, knowing that Jalen Hurts is still going to run for a ton of yards and a ton of touchdowns in any given week. Are you drafting Kenneth Gainwell with like a, I don't know, third or a fourth round pick if you could?
No, not that high, but I would be taking a shot at Kenneth Gainwell, especially in PPR, because Kenneth Gainwell he's a very good pass catcher. They talked about it on the broadcast yesterday. During his time at Memphis, especially his last year, he was one of the best all-purpose backs in college football. He was that good. He's a very adept pass catcher. He's very good at running the ball, which we saw yesterday. Not that the Eagles use their running backs so much in the passing game, but there's value there. And honestly, Show, that offensive line is so good that I would be fine with a lot of different running backs there. Like if Devin Singletary ended up in Philadelphia, I would be getting Devin Singletary shares because that offensive line is just so good that, you know, guys like Boston Scott are still having success, which makes no sense. But, you know, Miles Sanders didn't, he had a good year last year, but it wasn't a great year. I don't even think he scored a touchdown last year, but the bigger question for me is how, like, landing spot is going to affect a guy like Miles Sanders massively, only because I don't know if he's not good enough to put himself in the same tier as Saquon Barkley, obviously, but is he even good enough to put himself in the same conversation as Tony Pollard? And I don't know that that's the case, because a lot of people may look at Miles Sanders' skill set and go, yeah, he was a product of his offensive line. And that could be very well possible. So it'd be really interesting to see with Sanders. But yeah, I would be investing in Eagles running backs just because of how good we've seen them be this year. And specifically because that offensive line is very, very good.
If not a lot changes for the Eagles year over year, I have a feeling, like I do have a sneaking suspicion that a lot of Eagles players certainly will be drafted highly, but I wonder how overdrafted they will be. Like, I wonder where Jalen Hurts goes next year. I wonder where Dallas Goedert goes next year, where A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith go. I am very curious to see where they go. I mentioned Dallas Goedert. Obviously, he had a very, very good year. He did miss some time with injury, and he was still one of the top 10 tight ends overall. So we'll get to that stuff straight ahead. Finish up on the tight ends and our positional rankings. Certainly from this season compared to the preseason rankings, the beginning of the fantasy football season, and we'll get some help from a fantasy football legend. Bob Harris will join us at the top of the 9 o'clock hour to chat what to look ahead to in 2023. And like Matt said, we'll hear from Bob on, do playoff performances change people's opinions of players when it comes to draft time? I am curious to see if he changes his mind on a Travis Kelsey or a Kenneth Gainwell, for example. We'll chat with Bob at the top of the 9 o'clock hour. But you're listening to The Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. The Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Matt Marchese here with you for another hour and a bit. Straight ahead, Bob Harris will join us from SiriusXM Fantasy Radio. Obviously a Hall of Famer for the Fantasy Sports Writers Association as well. We'll chat with him about what to look ahead to in 2023, especially for your fantasy drafts, as far as those are concerned. But right now we will kind of wrap up on our 2022 preseason predictions for the tight end position and get into the top 12 tight ends as to how it actually played out this past season. And Matt, let's just get this out of the way, okay? Kyle Pitts is pretty high on both of our lists. I had him number one. I had him number one overall tight end in 2022. You had him number three. Safe to say, he did not finish in the top. I stopped counting tight ends after 15. I don't know if he finished like in the 16 to 20 range, but I'm going to guess that is a resounding no.
He finished as tight end 31.
Woo!
And
that is remarkable.
I mean, Show, honestly, when you put out your ranking, like we did the show together in early September, it was right before the season started, and we put out our rankings. And I said, when you did that, I said, I didn't think it was that hot of a take, because we saw what he did the season before as a rookie with Matt Ryan as his quarterback. And you're like, well, he's just going to get the ball a ton because there's nobody else really to throw the ball to. Here's the thing. There was nobody else to throw the ball to except for Drake London, but they didn't throw it to Kyle Pitts. They just ran the ball 1,000 times, which led me to say that Arthur Smith should be fired into the sun, because he ruined Kyle Pitts, at least for this season. So honestly, I feel like Kyle Pitts is going to be a great value in drafts next year just because of how poorly the season went. Like if he went looking at, like, he's probably going as like tight end 5 or 6 next year, mm-hmm. I think that's great value.
Hey, you know what? I have Kyle Pitts is approaching the Evan Engram category for me.
Oh, already? He just got here. He's like, here's your coat. What's your hurry? Like, holy smokes.
Like, you know that gif of, like, Grandpa Simpson when he, like, walks in?
Yeah.
And then he walks, he just puts his hat down, turns around, and walks right back out. That's how I feel on Kyle Pitts. Yeah, I say, and you know what's funny? The funny thing is, when he was in college, coming into the draft, and you look at his highlights, and this guy looks like an absolute monster, an unstoppable force of nature at times, and boy, he was very stoppable, very, very, very much so a stoppable force. Hey, on Evan Engram, I don't think we need to have this conversation again, just because I think over the last like 8 weeks of the season, going into like including the fantasy playoffs, I should say, we had a lot of Evan Engram discussion. But you had Engram as your sleeper, so I wanted to give you some congratulations. Congratulations to Matt Marchese for getting it right. Yeah.
Even a blind squirrel finds a nut. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while.
My sleeper was Irv Smith Jr. Marchese. So yeah, I'll give you credit. It's not broken. You know, maybe it's a little laggy sometimes. But no, you nailed it. You nailed it with Engram. You did.
You know, the only reason why I looked at like Evan Engram, like profiling athletically was. He's an impressive athlete. Yes, he had an issue with drops when he was with the Giants, but if we're being honest, the quarterback play in New York wasn't all that great when Evan Engram was there. And that was and he had a really good rookie season where he had over 500 yards. I think he had 50 catches, something like that. But they were able to use him in different parts of the field. Like they used him all over the place because, again, of how good he is athletically. But it was the relationship or the potential relationship with Doug Peterson that I said, you know, if there was a guy that is being drafted really low that could finish in the top 12, Evan Engram was the guy. At the time, it was probably a crazy thought just because Evan Engram really hadn't been all that successful over the past two seasons prior to this season. So I just looked at it and I said, you know what, there's a shot here. Was it a complete shot in the dark? No. Did I really believe it was going to happen? Yeah, like I thought he was going to finish like potentially, you know, around the 13 to 10 mark. But I don't think anybody envisioned a sixth place finish because he also really, like you said, he heated up over the last 7 or 8 weeks. And that's where he really took over. So if you get that kind of production over the course of a season from Evan Engram, I think he had like over 770 yards. I think he had 7 touchdowns. He had a really, really good year. I mean, it was impressive, and I'm curious to see how I think he ends up returning to the Jacksonville Jaguars. I really do believe that.
I think he's probably best served in doing so because he'll be paired with an offensive guru, as they call Doug Peterson, a rising star and a QB that was already described as a generational prospect and so on. So I feel like there are probably not very many other situations where you as a player can grow along with other quarterbacks and other players as well and be a big part of the game plan. So you're probably right. And we've also seen a la Christian Kirk that it's not as though Jacksonville is afraid of handing out gigantic contracts anyways, right? So it's very well possible that Evan Engram does return. The drops thing in New York is just what confuses me. It's just, I do agree with you that the QB play is just better that he got this year versus when he was in New York over the course of a couple seasons. But I mean, like he was making routine catches look so difficult in New York.
100%.
And like most of the time this year, he made really difficult catches look routine. Like it's like he went to Jacksonville and decided, you know what? I'm going to start catching the football more. I'm just going to do it. I've decided to just do it more. And then he did. And then now he's a top 10 tight end. It's just baffling to me. But either way, he did finish as a top 6. This is actually how the top 12 shook out in the end. I said Dallas Goedert was a top 10 tight end, but he just missed out on the top 10 by like literally 2.5 points. But Travis Kelce, as you might expect, was the number one tight end this year, 248 points. TJ Hockenson finished number 2 with 170 points. So the difference between Kelce and Hockenson was astronomical. The difference between Hockenson and number three, who did end up as Mark Andrews, was about 24 points. Mark Andrews had 154 points in number three spot. Kittle was a point behind him, 153 points. Taysom Hill was a top five tight end this season, 138 points.
And how many catches did he have?
I don't know.
I'm gonna look it up.
Obviously, a lot of Taysom Hill's,
I think it was like two.
Yeah, a lot of his points came from rushing the football, and I dare say he probably had more points from acting as a faux quarterback than he did as an actual tight end. So it does make you kind of wonder if they will remove, if that continues, if they remove the tight end, like the designation tight end wise from him on Yahoo. I'll say this too: if you search up Taysom Hill on some platforms, I bet it's not the same, because Yahoo does have him as a tight end. I don't know that every platform has him as a tight end, depending on, I think most of them do, but not all of them do. So your mileage may vary when it comes to Hill, but either way.
Nine catches, by the way, nine catches. So now my question is, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but do they change his designation from QB and tight end to QB and running back?
Running back, yeah. I can see that.
That makes more sense.
It does make more sense, honestly. And if that's the case, then he'll probably still carry some value. But I still think the reason Taysom Hill is as valuable as he is, and it's certainly because he's a top five tight end, but it's because you can start him as a tight end, because he is effectively, like, if you're in a league where you're starting two running backs and a flex, you could, if you have Taysom Hill, in theory, start four running backs, basically, right?
Yeah.
Where the value comes from. So if he loses the tight end designation and he is a QB running back, it's still valuable. It's just not as valuable. It's only valuable because the tight end position is so scarce literally after the top three guys, top four guys we mentioned in Kelce, Hockenson, Andrews, Kittle, right? So
like, yeah, exactly.
That's basically what it is, right? So I'm not sure if that changes. I'm not so sure we'll be talking about Hill in the same way, but it's just funny after, you know, us calling him the fantasy Grinch for most of the season, that he did actually finish above Evan Engram and above a bunch of other guys as well. You look at the rest of this list. Evan Engram is at six, as we discussed. Freiermuth, seven. He's at 116 points. Juwan Johnson, another Saints tight end, who caught just a boatload of touchdowns this year. He was number eight. He had 111 points. Tyler Higbee, he was nine with 110 points. Dalton Schultz was the 10th overall tight end, 108 points. Cole Kmet, 11, 108 points. So Schultz was 108.9. Kmet was 108.6. Dallas Goedert, 106.1. So I have a feeling had Schultz and Goedert not been injured, they probably would have finished much higher up this list. If only because, like they probably would have both finished at worst as the 6-7, 7-8 tight ends, even if they had not gotten injured, just because the difference between Schultz at 10 and Evan Engram at 6 is about, 20 points? And they were playing very, very well over the course of the season. Dallas Goedert as well, the difference between him and Taysom Hill, also about 15 points. So, I don't know. I have a feeling that injury-wise, they would have been a little higher up there. So, I have a feeling Schultz, Goedert are probably going to be in the top 5, top 7 conversation again when we do our rankings in August and September.
Oh, for sure. And like Goedert before he got hurt was having an incredible season.
Yeah, he was great.
Like dare I say that he probably would have finished in the top three, and maybe ahead of
Andrews.
Probably ahead of Andrews, and he may have even finished ahead of T.J. Hockenson.
I could see it.
Hockenson really didn't heat up until he got to Minnesota.
That's true.
And that was like whatever it was, week eight, I think he got traded. So week nine, I think he played. He was really good, but Dallas Goedert was a big part of that offense in Philadelphia before he got hurt. So I would not be surprised if we see Dallas Goedert taken as a top four or five tight end.
There was one particular week, I forget which week it was, but there was a week where I desperately needed a win just to keep pace with some of the other players. I did make the playoffs in this particular league, but I needed the win to keep pace, and all I needed was Devontae Smith to not have a monster game. And he'd been having just like monster game after monster game all season to this point. And what happened in that game, it's as though Jalen Hurts heard my thoughts and decided to essentially only throw the ball to Dallas Goedert. I don't know if you remember this. It was a primetime game. And on one drive, it was literally 12-yard pass to Dallas Goedert, 13-yard pass to Dallas Goedert, incompletion, 13-yard pass to Dallas Goedert, run for two yards, 32-yard touchdown pass to Dallas Goedert. And I thought, geez, like, he just loves throwing the ball to Goedert. And I think by the time they even looked at Devonta Smith again, it was out of hand. So, you know, he got benched or the running game had taken over at that point. It was just absurd. So I fully think that's going to be the case again next year. I think for our rankings, the only guys we really missed out on, Dawson Knox, like you and I both had Dawson Knox in our top 12. Dawson Knox finishes a 13th overall tight end, and he missed out of the 12th spot by 3 points. So there's a pretty good chance that Dawson Knox is in that conversation again next year. Other than Kyle Pitts, I would say the only real misses each of us had were Darren Wall. Actually, I had Hunter Henry in there, so that's definitely a miss. But Darren Waller, I had him at 6, you had him at 7.
And he was hurt again, and that's why we had him low on our list, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, right about that.
How do you? Yeah, that is true. How do you account for injury though? Because like I hesitate to use the label injury prone because injuries are a complete fluke to me. Like, yes, if you got injured before, maybe you are likely a teensy bit to get injured again. But he had been gotten injured in a bunch of different ways. This year was the hamstring multiple times, so maybe that is something to be wary about. But like how do you bake in like injury expectations? People still took Christian McCaffrey like 2 overall this year, essentially.
Well, here's how I look at it. I mean, some guys, they just get hurt. Even if they miss a couple of games or whatever, they just get hurt. And I think that Darren Waller's just in that conversation. I think you can safely assume that he's going to miss 2 or 3 games every year. And now the question becomes, who's going to be his quarterback? And I'm not sure of who that's going to be at this point.
Yeah, I don't know if it's Tom Brady or someone else. I hope we're not having like the Jordan Reed conversation when it comes to Darren Waller. Because I remember I read this terrific piece once where it was like Jordan Reed was so athletic that his like bones couldn't keep up with the muscle mass that he had put on, essentially. It was wild. It was like one of the craziest things I'd ever seen. So I'm hoping that's not the case for good old Darren Waller. Maybe we'll get into some tight end conversation with Bob Harris straight ahead. He's a host at SiriusXM Fantasy Radio, senior editor at Football Diehards, and of course, a Hall of Famer for the Fantasy Sports Writers Association. Get into some tight end conversation, playoff discussion as well, and what to look forward to in 2023. The drafts are, it feels like they're far away, but they are, it feels like they're going to also sneak up on you as they do every single year. So a conversation with Bob Harris next. You're listening to The Fantasy Show, Show and Matt on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is The Fantasy Show with Sho Ali and Matt Marchese on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome back to The Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Hour 2 of the program. Sho Ali, Matt Marchese here with you until the top of the next hour. Reach the show anytime. 590-590 is where you can text us. Name and location, please, as always, so we can give you a quick shout-out if you do choose to text us. You can reach us on Twitter as well, at SNS Ali with 2 L's, at MattyMar89, or at The Fantasy Show. Very pleased to be joined by our guest, Bob Harris, host at SiriusXM Fantasy Radio, senior editor at footballdiehards.com, and of course, Fantasy Sports Writers Association Hall of Famer. Bob, how's it going this morning?
It's going fantastic, much better than it is for Patrick Mahomes, I suspect.
I suspect you are right. I suspect you're correct. Bob, before we get into any fantasy topics today, I actually do want to ask you about Chiefs-Jags and Mahomes' ankle. Like, where do you think this week the overall coverage of that ankle will fall? Like, I put it somewhere between, like, the MASH series finale and a presidential election.
I would put it slightly ahead of the presidential election, at least in my world. It's going to be intense and nonstop. And, you know, just like the treatment that Patrick Mahomes is going to get, right? They're going to be treating him around the clock. There'll be a trainer or training staff with him at all times, and all kinds of procedures and techniques will be applied in the hopes of getting better. First, the MRI today, we'll see. Maybe that precludes everything. Maybe it's, you know, often we find out there's something a little worse than we knew in the moment. So we'll be assuming that, you know, everything goes as expected with the MRI. It will be insane. I think it seems like you guys, you know, you follow this. It just gets more intense constantly, and the amount of media doesn't diminish as the teams diminish. It only intensifies. It's just more people focused on a smaller number of teams. So the amount of grist coming out of the mill is much greater.
Bob, you know, in speaking of that game yesterday, we had a conversation last week about what to do with Travis Kelce next year in drafts. And the conversation hinged around, is he a back end of the first round type player in PPR format? I mean, tight end premium is a different conversation entirely. But, you know, my thing was, is I can't see that, just because we saw what happened over the course of, you know, the previous 4 weeks or whatever it was. Did yesterday's game change your opinion on how to approach Travis Kelce? Because I look largely at, you know, Patrick Mahomes is on one leg and they're trying to get the ball out quick. And the beneficiary of that is Travis Kelce. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think it'll be a little bit of an issue next week. I'll definitely have concerns, you know, but it's a pretty shallow pool. And at some point, talent wins out. If you're playing daily, you know, daily game, the pricing will be a factor there as well. And this has kind of been a pretty good postseason for tight ends, if you will, for following a regular season that, you know, kind of, you know, seemed like it was a pretty weak group in general, right? You had a handful of guys you were chasing. And everybody was chasing, and only a few people had. So I do think that, you know, the pricing will matter, but I tend to shy away from someone going into a game that's already injured. And Jalen Hurts told me not to do that anymore last night.
So for next season, I look at playoff performances, and we do tend to get a little bit too caught up in the moment. I mean, sometimes we do, yes. Sometimes we look and go, okay, that's just a one-off. Like Gabe Davis was the guy last season who had the incredible playoff, and that was very reflective in his draft capital. And he didn't have a horrible year. He finished as wide receiver 28, but he also didn't have the season that we expected and the people that invested capital in him as a top 15 wide receiver. The guy I look at, and there's a lot of questions going into next year, is Isaiah Hodgins, who was really good down the stretch for the Giants. And granted, yesterday obviously didn't go very well for basically anybody. If nothing changes, if they decide to maybe not add anything of significance to that wide receiver room, did you see enough from Isaiah Hodgins that you look and say, you know what, that is absolutely worth a late round dart just because of what he showed me?
Yeah, going back to the two previous thoughts on Travis Kelce, it would not be insane to see him. You will see him in some drafts go with the first pick overall as people dial a little bit back on the running back and try and gain leverage over the field. That's still the name of the game in fantasy. And I know my co-host on Sirius, Mike Dempsey, is going to be investing some first picks overall in Kelce. First round for sure. You're exactly right on Gabe Davis. And I think, you know, a guy like Hodges, we do remember the last thing we see. And the last thing we saw was him on a pretty good touchdown roll. You know, I want to say when you're drafting certain players, you're not actually drafting the player. You're drafting the scheme, the coach, and everything. And I think in this case, you're drafting all those things with Hodgins. The Giants, you know, Joe Shane and Ryan Dable were familiar with him from their time in Buffalo. We'd heard about him, you know, we'd heard the name bandied about with some good, you know, training camp performances in Buffalo. Then he had an unfortunate ankle injury last year. This year, he was about to get released. They went and grabbed him, and they knew what they had in him. And clearly, they, you know, had some designs. We'll see how it plays out. They're going to add some pieces at that position. But he'll be on my radar, and if the price is right, I'll definitely be investing in him.
Chatting with Bob Harris, host of SiriusXM Fantasy Radio, senior editor of footballdiehards.com, and, of course, Fantasy Sports Writers Association Hall of Famer here on the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Bob, you know, you mentioned drafting schemes sometimes and not players, and we did see, I guess it was what, last week, time is a flat circle here these days, but Greg Roman out in Baltimore, and they affirming, I suppose, and again you have to take some of this with a grain of salt, I suppose, but affirming that Lamar Jackson is the QB in Baltimore with no Greg Roman. How much does whoever the OC is in Baltimore next year affect, let's just again say Lamar does start the year in Baltimore, how much does that offensive coordinator position affect how or where you might draft either Lamar or maybe even J.K. Dobbins?
I think we'll all dial back on Lamar just a little bit. I mean, the performance wasn't great, you know, before the injury. And, you know, and people, again, remember the last thing they saw, which was not Lamar, right? And so out of sight, out of mind a little bit. So look for that ADP to dip on him a little bit. But in general, I think we might overplay the, you know, this whole scheme had been built around Lamar's mobility and running ability, and Greg Roman's been known for that going back to his times in San Francisco, coaching Colin Kaepernick. And, you know, at various points, getting the most out of quarterbacks like that. My friend Emery Hunt tweeted on, just put it out there that before folks start wrongly discussing, I think is how he put it, the Ravens' search for a new offensive coordinator. Lamar Jackson ran a pro-style offense in college at Louisiana under Bobby Petrino. Lamar retweeted that with a thank you, right? So I think Lamar is maybe a little more interested in a more pro-style offense, and who knows? We're not privy to what's going on in Baltimore, so I think there's kind of a negative connotation to this whole thing. Why wasn't he there at that last game? We thought he would be better. All our expectations, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Maybe Lamar had a hand. Maybe all this is part of getting Lamar to stick around, or maybe enticing him to stick around. And the management has already said he'll have a say in the next coordinator. I think we might see a more pro-style attack that allows him to throw the ball a little more and also freelance a little more, more so than the design runs, which might even make him more effective. So it's something I'm going to have a close eye on, who the next coordinator is there.
I'm not going to lie, Bob. I had Lamar Jackson as like a top three quarterback this year, going for a contract. And yes, I was very, very disappointed. Although he looked like a world beater in the first 2 weeks of the season, so sure. I didn't feel as bad then. But just sticking on the quarterback conversation, so Justin Fields took a massive step forward, especially from fantasy perspective. Trevor Lawrence did the same, albeit yesterday not so great. And the other guy was Daniel Jones. So when you look at those three guys going into next season, and this is assuming that Daniel Jones is back with the Giants and Brian Daboll, because I feel like that's what's going to happen here. How do you approach those guys in drafts? Because we've seen in the past, like a lot in one QB league specifically, people tend to wait and they try and draft like, you know, your Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilsons, Derek Carrs, whatever. But like, have any of those guys, and maybe less so Daniel Jones, but have Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence kind of crept into the conversation for top five next year? I think Fields maybe has. But what about a guy like Lawrence?
Fields has. Lawrence, not so much for me, you know, but top 10 for sure. I think he finished his quarterback eight. And, you know, again, you look at the scheme and the coaching staff. This coaching staff was brought into make Trevor Lawrence into Trevor Lawrence, right? After a disappointing rookie season, they invested a first-round pick overall. And not without good reason, right? There's something there, and we've seen signs of that, or, you know, a pretty good demonstration of that. I'm understating the case. And Doug Peterson and the staff, if you look at the staff around him, it's manned by a lot of, like, there's four coaches on there that are former quarterbacks, right? So, you know, it's built for success. Justin Fields' case, I'd like to see the Bears make a little more commitment to helping him improve as a passer, but the rushing equity there makes him a no-brainer. I think he will be going in the top five, and we'll all be hoping for him to make a Jalen Hurts type progression in his passing a game. And I think he can, right? I mean, you see the arm talent there. So hopefully the Bears can put some pieces around him, and I think that'll be part of what we're looking for. But he's not getting out of the top five quarterbacks. There's no way. And Daniel Jones, he might be the one I end up with the most of, because he'll be the cheapest, and I'm old, mean, and cheap and want my discounts. And with Jones, you've got to remember that, like, his three 300-yard passing games came, two of them were against Minnesota, right, who could not play defense. Detroit Lions, who also at that time did not play much defense. So, you know, his rushing ability is way underrated. But I think, again, you look at the coach, where he comes from, what he did with his previous quarterback, Josh Allen, a guy who, when he came in the league, was not known for being accurate or, you know, I think expectations were pretty low for Josh Allen, relatively speaking, to where he is now. And I think Brian Daboll probably had something to do with that. So I'm okay investing in a player who, look, I wasn't the engineer on the hype train of Daniel Jones' rookie year, but I was at least the conductor. And I was all in on him, and I thought, you know, some of his abilities would fit well. I think he's a good fit now for this offense. So he'll probably be the cheapest of those three, probably go outside the top 10, and that probably means I'll have a number of shares in him. But I'll say this, I'm going into draft this year with a different mindset, or just at least a more open mind to paying attention to what the NFL values, right, you guys? Because, I mean, fantasy managers, we tend to focus on running backs because of positional scarcity. all there's becoming more running backs because they're being used differently than when I started playing fantasy football in 1986. And the evolution is, you just look what teams are investing their capital in, both in terms of financial capital and in draft capital. It's wide receivers and quarterbacks. And that's because the game has evolved, and those are the most important pieces. So I think you'll see draft shifting. You've already seen it with people, you know, going zero RB. I'm not going that crazy. I'll do a hero RB thing. Still want a good running back, but I'm going to focus more on receiving talent because I think that's the direction the game's going.
Yeah, it will be fascinating to see where guys like free agents like Miles Sanders or Tony Pollard, yeah, or certainly other guys as well who are good, potentially stay with their teams, but if they change, how much would that affect draft capital and so on? Like we were talking about Saquon Barkley earlier, Bob, and
right,
we would love to see Barkley return to the Giants and probably stay as a top 5 to 7 pick. Sure, but if Saquon Barkley goes to play for the Carolina Panthers or if he goes to play for the Miami Dolphins, I'm sure he's a talented enough player that I think a lot of people will believe in him, and I'm probably one of those guys, but it will largely affect draft capital. And I mean, look, Tony Pollard was the same guy this year. He was drafted, he was tabbed as a breakout candidate, but I'm not sure we thought that the Dallas Cowboys offense would go so far away from the pass and lean so heavily into running backs, not just with one guy, but a seemingly resurgent Ezekiel Elliott, for example.
Right. Barkley, Josh Jacobs is another one that'll be out there that we'd like to see stick in the same spot because the usage, et cetera. But, it's a two-edged sword. You know, a player becomes part of what he becomes, is, as we mentioned, the scheme and the staff and the pieces around him are part of what makes that player into that player. Talent is a role as well. And other teams are buying that talent and hoping they can put the similar scheme and talent around that player to get those same results, right? But that doesn't always happen. And I think, you know, a lot of times I think, you know, wow, you got to this position as a player where you can continue to succeed if the money is pretty close. Why not, you know, the changing is not always the best outcome, right? Sticking around a place that made you great sometimes can be a great outcome as well. So I think in, you know, Barkley's case, Josh Jacobs' case, I would love to see them stick in place. Doesn't mean they can't be successful somewhere else, but all the ingredients for their success we know are in place in their current home. So a lot of times, but look, A.J. Brown says players can succeed, you know, moving on to new teams. I mean, Tyreek Hill, I mean, the examples are copious there as well. But just for me, I think, especially in a league that just doesn't value running backs the way they have in the past, you're right. Miami would be a great landing spot. There are certain schemes and places where it seems like you can pretty much plug and play running back talent. But that is part of the problem with running backs. You can plug and play. There's going to be a running back that, you know, wins somebody's league that nobody drafted, said, you know, Jerick McKinnon. And I could come up with an example every single year of a running back nobody drafted last year, Rashad Penny. Going back to the day, Nick Goings, Ruben Jones. I mean, it's an endless list of players. David Johnson, Arian Foster. I mean, I could go on and on of players who come out of nowhere that people didn't draft that end up winning their fantasy titles, and they're all running backs.
Bob, one more before we let you go here. And this player to me is super interesting only because he, like you talk about the scheme, he goes to a good offense. Calvin Ridley was dealt at the trade deadline. He's able to file for reinstatement, I believe, on February 15th. And
yes,
I'm just curious to see what your approach is in both redraft and maybe specifically dynasty and how you approach a guy like that, because he basically hasn't played football in 2 years. He was an older player coming out of college and into the NFL, so he doesn't have a ton. Like he's been very good at the NFL level. I get that, but how do you approach Calvin Ridley? Because he really feels like the guy that, you know, you could probably get for a decent price right now, and then once he's reinstated, that conversation completely changes. But he potentially, with Trevor Lawrence, could have a great season next year. How do you approach Calvin Ridley? Because for me personally, he scares the hell out of me. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. I haven't been a huge Calvin Ridley, you know, promoter, investor, I would say, but I do have some dynasty shares and they've been holds for me just because, again, I want to get at least some return on him. And I think maybe that's probably the best, you know, solution for dynasty managers is hold on. I could see getting, you know, trying to acquire him if someone is looking or has been looking to get rid of him, but they're probably not now, most fantasy managers are savvy enough. They're going to be, you know, they're going to be on to the fact that he's going to be reinstated and the Jaguar in an up and coming offense. Like, he's an intriguing piece. I'd like to, you know, I'd like to see what the ADP is going to be. Right now, I'm kind of like, I'll take a wait and see approach. Don't want to overpay. And I think, you know, you guys know how this works. The attention that'll be drawn, the coverage that he'll get, he'll be on the front burner. Everyone will be talking about him. That tends to drive prices up. So I might not have as many shares as I'd like.
That's fair. Yeah, I am curious to see how the presence of Ridley affects where guys like Evan Engram go or guys where Christian Kirk go. I am interested to see what the kind of ripple effect is come the summer, come the early fall. Real quick, before we let you go, Bob, is Bijan Robinson the number one dynasty pick for you in rookie drafts this year?
Yes, probably so in non-Superflex.
Right.
I play a lot of Superflex dynasty, so the quarterback draw is going to be valuable. But yes, he'll be first in line, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I got to say, trading, it might be like a terrible line of me to go down, but I love drafting running backs, and it's terrible, especially in dynasty. I'm not in a lot of super flex dynasty leagues, I will say, so I think you're probably right. That might change, but we appreciate you spending some time with us, Bob, here on a Sunday morning. Best of luck with your fantasy seasons next season, of course, and enjoy the football today.
Yeah, you guys do it as well, and thanks for inviting me, and holler anytime. I appreciate it.
There he goes. Bob Harris, host of SiriusXM Fantasy Radio, senior editor, footballdiehards.com, and, of course, Hall of Famer for the Fantasy Sports Writers Association. I had to sneak in the Bijan Robinson thing. I have the number one overall dynasty pick after basically completely evacuating that team, Marchese, earlier this season and over the last couple of years. So I do have the number one overall pick in this particular league this coming season. So it's not a super flex league. So I think Bijan Robinson is going to be a member of the Southside Serpents very soon.
Well, you know, it's funny that Bob mentioned in super flex leagues that he may not go one. I still think in a lot of super flex leagues he is going to go one, just because we've talked like the quarterback position, and I know there's always value when you're drafting those guys, and I get that entirely. The only thing is that there are so many quarterbacks that are in and around the same value that when you can get a guy like Bijan Robinson, who profiles as the best running back prospect since Saquon Barkley, is pretty good. So I can see why teams would go, because if you generally speaking are picking first overall, you probably or may not have very good quarterbacks, just because that's kind of the way that it works. If you don't have good quarterbacks in Superflex or 2QB leagues, it's really hard to be good. But Bijan Robinson is going to be an absolute stud. Like, he is one of those players that it doesn't really matter on landing spot. And I'm glad he brought up the conversation about Lamar Jackson and running a more pro-style offense like he did at Louisville, because that, to me, when I hear that, that means wheels up J.K. Dobbins. Isn't that what you heard?
Oh, yeah, 1,000%.
In that conversation?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because the other thing is, too, is that something that we've talked about it, maybe not on this show, new tongue working it out, this show specifically, but on other shows where we just do general NFL talk, I mean, if they're going to invest in Lamar Jackson on a long-term deal, and I don't know that that's going to be this year, it may just be he gets tagged and then they work towards an extension after that. But I do wonder if the next offensive coordinator, they bring him in and say, Lamar needs to be a little bit more of, maybe not a pocket passer, but Lamar needs to throw more and needs to be on the run less, because this is an investment. And generally speaking, running quarterbacks do not have a long shelf life. And I wonder if that's part of the conversation with the next offensive coordinator.
I wonder if they could bring, I wonder how attractive it would be for the Baltimore offense to, and for certainly for fantasy owners, if, let's say, Frank Reich was the offensive coordinator for Baltimore, or if they could somehow lure Cliff Kingsbury back from Thailand. Would Kingsbury be a good offensive coordinator pick? I wonder. Like, I mean, again, you could see a lot of those are maybe two of the bigger names out there that would probably be pretty good as offensive coordinators. Again, probably for any team, but at the same time, I don't want to like dump on Greg Roman too much, because I do think, given how he helped turn Lamar Jackson into an MVP, it's obviously there was something right, but Greg Roman's offense is just not very wide receiver friendly. And then on top of that, the wide receivers in Baltimore were not exactly world beaters, right? Like Rashad Bateman was probably the highest investment they'd spent on a wide receiver in quite some time. I know Hollywood Brown was there for quite some time as well, and then he departed to Arizona. So I kind of wonder if it's a twofold thing to help out Lamar. Get a more pro-friendly offensive coordinator who will take advantage of his arm, because he does have an arm, and then also get him a couple better wide receivers. Again, we have this conversation all the time. I mean, you mentioned it when we do the NFL, the general NFL segments during the week. You talk about like Tua taking a bit of a leap after he gets Tyreek Hill. You talk about Jalen Hurts taking a bit of a leap after he gets AJ Brown. Josh Allen took a bit of a leap after he got Stephon Diggs. Obviously, it works out for Kirk Cousins now that he has Justin Jefferson, and it certainly helps Joe Burrow that he has Ja'Marr Chase. I'm not saying you have to spend like a top 10 pick on a wide receiver, but I mean, when it comes to guys who don't have a lot of talent at wide receiver, certainly changing the offensive scheme would help, but also getting them some better players, you know, to maybe just take the burden off the run game and other wide receivers, and that offense would help. I mean, look, the reverse is true too. Look at how Aaron Rodgers performed this year without Davante Adams. Not great, right? So I would love to see a big time wide receiver either through the draft or free agent wise go to Baltimore along with an offensive coordinator.
For sure. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was having this conversation with somebody, and we talked like going into this season, show there was always the narrative that when a wide receiver changes teams that they struggle in their first year. That was an ongoing conversation. When we look back on it, it seems pretty ridiculous considering how successful Tyreek Hill was, how successful, I mean, Davante Adams was in a different thing, but Davante Adams finished as the wide receiver 3 overall. So he's certainly no slouch. And you also had AJ Brown, who had an incredible season with the Philadelphia Eagles. I did not believe in my head before this season that adding a wide receiver like that would have made this much of a difference overall to a team, because I guess it just hasn't happened all that often, which kind of gave us the reason as to, well, how do we think this is going to go? Probably not great. But now I look at it and say, okay, what happens to Daniel Jones if they add a big time wide receiver, whether it be through trade,
sure,
whether it be,
yeah,
through free agency? What happens to Justin Fields, mm-hmm, if, mm-hmm, they bring in a wide, like, we're having an entirely different conversation here. So I've completely changed my tune, and Bob made the point, and Bob was great, by the way. Bob made the point in the conversation we had about how people are changing their draft strategy as well and looking at what teams invest in, and that's what we should invest in, because that does make sense to me. When we talk about maybe acquiring top end wide receivers, as they like to say, it's a passing league, but look at how it's changing. Look at the guys that were, you know, the zero running back strategy, or in Bob's case, he talked about the hero running back strategy. So if you can get like Saquon Barkley, and then you end up, you know, drafting, going 3 wide receivers in a row before even contemplating your second running back spot, and guys like Tony Pollard were available and Ramondre Stevenson were available, and those are the types of players that ended up winning leagues for you because you were able to solidify the wide receiver position. I'm very intrigued by that conversation and just investing in wide receivers and letting the running back position kind of figure itself out.
I almost feel like there's no chance we are going to see Saquon Barkley get a Todd Gurley like extension. You know what I mean? Like, it just feels like the days of getting just millions and millions and millions of dollars in guaranteed money they're probably over as it pertains to running backs. Maybe not forever. Like, I feel like the NFL is pretty cyclical. So as we see things shift towards smaller running backs, and then you might see a shift towards faster linebackers because they can cover the running backs and these shifty quarterbacks as well. Maybe eventually, as the linebackers get smaller and smaller, you might see a shift back to tree trunk Derrick Henry like running backs, and then it goes on and on and on and on, right? Like, you might just see that eventually. But I think you're right. Like, just for this coming off season, I would be surprised if really, honestly, any of the running backs get gargantuan deals. Like, there'll still be some decent money thrown around as well. But I am looking forward to seeing what the different free agent destinations will look like. Maybe we'll do that here on the Fantasy Show. Maybe we'll come back for an episode or two during the offseason, podcast only, on the air, whatever it may be, and take a look at what the offseason has in store for not just the NFL,
but for
fantasy football as well. Yeah, go ahead.
We should do free agents and our favorite landing spots for each free agent for fantasy purposes.
Sure.
Because, I mean, we have time over the next few weeks. There's certainly not going to be a lot of football going on with only two games next week and then nothing the week after. But it is an interesting way to look at things because, I mean, how many times do we look at free agents and go, oh, this is the perfect landing spot? And they like Kenny Golladay leaving Detroit. And I was like, oh, man, Kenny Golladay would be such a great fit in countless places. And then he goes to he goes to the Giants and you're like, really? He went to the Giants, and we've seen what's happened since he's gone to the Giants. Absolutely nothing has happened. So be curious to see, like, you know, a guy like Saquon Barkley, like, you talk about Miami being – imagine him with Miami. My goodness, that would be something. So maybe a conversation that we have over the next few weeks, since we've got, what, three shows left of the Fantasy Show before we depart for the offseason?
Yeah, you're right, actually. You're right. Yeah, we have the 29th, the 5th, and then the 12th, which is the morning of the Super Bowl. Something tells me we might hear from some past voices on the Fantasy Show, both past and present. So we'll get that's straight ahead in the next couple of weeks. And again, hey, if you want to reach the show anytime and weigh in on what you want to see us cover from a fantasy perspective, you can do that at 590-590, name and location. That is the people's text line. We'll leave it open for the next couple of weeks and we'll see what we get. Let's take a quick break, Matt. When we come back, we'll get to Bills, Bengals, and of course, Cowboys, 49ers. I know this is like sacrilege because we're based in Toronto. And of course, here, the Bills are like the pseudo, there's no real home team, but the Bills, as a location wise, proximity wise, are the pseudo home team. Cowboys, 49ers, that's got the most juice for me. I can't wait. I'm so excited to watch this game. So I am very much looking forward to chatting about that with you. Bills, Bengals as well. We'll get into the divisional round, the last couple of games before the AFC and NFC Championship next weekend. We'll see who is going to be traveling to Arrowhead and who will be traveling. Well, maybe not Arrowhead. It might be a neutral site game. And who is traveling to Philly next weekend. That's straight ahead on the Fantasy Show. Show and Matt on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Segment to go on the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali and Matt Marchese here with you till the top of the hour. Reach the show anytime, 590-590. Name and location, please. That is the people's text line. You can reach us on Twitter as well, at SNS Ali with two L's, at Maddie Mar 89, at The Fantasy Show is where you can reach us on Twitter as always. Matt, I said we will look ahead to Bills, Bengals, Cowboys, 49ers. I did my, I think it's my last piece for Sportsnet.ca for the NFL slate for the X Factors. And they asked me to pick one player from each matchup who will be an X Factor. I was not allowed to pick stars. So I couldn't be like, oh, the X Factor for the Cowboys?
I think I know where you're going.
It's going to be CeeDee Lamb. It's gonna, you know what I mean? It can't be Stephon Diggs, right? I was going to pick, I picked James Cook last week for the Bills.
Yes, you did.
I did.
Yes, you did.
And he scored a touchdown. So I feel like if you score a touchdown, I feel like I can claim a victory on that. I can claim a win on that one.
For sure.
I will admit on these airwaves only that I picked him because of you. I picked James Cook last week. And I also picked Evan Engram last week specifically because of you. I was writing them and I'm like, I'm going to go with Zay Jones. And I'm like, oh, no, you know what? Marchese always talks about Engram. Let's get Engram in there. Let's get him in there. This week, I went with a Chiefs player, and I went with I went with Gabe Davis, actually, for the Buffalo Bills. It's funny because when I wrote the X Factors piece last year, I actually did pick Gabe Davis for the divisional round, and then he scored four touchdowns, and I was so mad that I didn't put any sort of money down on Gabe Davis in the divisional round. I don't know if I'm going to trick myself into doing that this year, but it's wild to think that Gabe Davis had, over 100 yards last week. He tied Stephon Diggs for the team lead in targets, and you got to think, I mean, if we peons know that, then you got to think that Zach Taylor and company also know that. Having said that, after their top coverage, which will likely be glued for the most part to Stephon Diggs, the rest of the corners that play for the Bengals, honestly, they're not great. I mean, we saw Eli Apple last weekend get roasted by DeMarcus Robinson, and now he's going to have the task of covering Gabe Davis. I don't like Eli Apple to win that battle.
No, I don't either. I don't like Eli Apple to win a lot of matchups, actually.
True.
And specifically against Gabe Davis, who was really, you know, Chris Sims said, I think it was on the NBC broadcast, or maybe it was on his podcast. I'm not 100% sure. But he said, like, nobody is afraid of the Bills playmakers. And I was like, well, that seems kind of ridiculous, because have you seen the New York Giants playmakers? Like, it's not great. But when I look at it, I mean, James Cook was good last week. I anticipate that they're going to run the ball a little bit today, but it's going to be done through the air. And the guy that's, you know, Stephon Diggs is at the top of that list. We know that, but let's not think that Gabe Davis, like, I think Gabe Davis is going to have a good day. Like, I'm willing to bet money that Gabe Davis is going to have a good day. I anticipate that Gabe Davis has a very good chance to get into the end zone. And he's the one thing that we know about Gabe Davis is that in the playoffs, he's pretty damn good. He had a really, you know, his first kind of introduction to playoff football was a couple of years ago with the Indianapolis Colts. In that game, he was incredible.
He was, yeah.
And I think he had, like, he had a couple of toe drag swag grabs. Shout out Nate Burleson. And he's been really good in the playoffs. Is he consistent any other times? Not very consistent. But when it comes to the playoffs, he's really good. And I anticipate that that's going to be much of the same today. The big kind of matchup for me right now is, how are the Bills going to be able to defend the big play? Like, Micah Hyde's still not back yet. Mm-hmm. That 21-day window is closing very slowly. But after this week, if they can get through it, that speeds up very, very fast. And so how do they defend the big play with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, and to a lesser extent, Tyler Boyd? With two offensive linemen down, I think that kind of limits it a little bit, but I'm very curious to see how the Bills kind of get through that and if they can have a significant pass rush in order to kind of curb the big play. Because God knows, we know Ja'Marr Chase is very capable of producing those types of plays.
Well, too, I mean, I know at the practice basically all week, both Dane Jackson and Jordan Poyer were both listed as limited. I think they were listed as day-to-day, I think a couple days before that, right after the, you know, maybe on like a Monday or Tuesday or whatever. So I am genuinely curious as to how healthy they will be. And I mean, look, Dane Jackson, I don't want to use the word disappointment necessarily, but he hasn't been as good as expected. And now you're going to go up against, you're already on top of that, you're also injured. And now you're going to go up against Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd, and be also tasked to certain degrees with stopping Joe Mixon and even Joe Burrow running down the field. Like, he can move. So I do think ultimately, and Joe Burrow is not the kind of guy who turns the ball over a lot. He's much more precise than, let's say, a Skylar Thompson might be. And I mean, still, Skylar Thompson played very well last week, but it's going to be tough. Like, my pick for this game, yes, it is the Buffalo Bills, largely because in the preseason I picked the Bills, and I mean, that's like a kind of a chalk pick anyways. I freely admit that, because the Bills had a lot of expectations riding on them after last season, and certainly over after this season as well. With Donovan Bennett, we kind of revisited our preseason predictions. I'm sticking with the Bills, but boy, the Bengals have got to be one of the stiffest tests. I also feel like the Bengals are one of those teams that, despite the fact that they were a very good team in the regular season, they won their division relatively handily. Joe Burrow was very, very good as well, despite having injuries up and down the lineup, like a lot of other guys did, like most teams do, right? Attrition sets in no matter who you are, but in every sport, much less football. But it does somehow feel as though, despite that, the Bills and Chiefs are viewed as like the undisputed best teams. And they are obviously very good, but it almost feels like the Bengals get overlooked a little bit sometimes.
They do. And I think, I feel like they were in the Super Bowl last year. It's not like they came out of nowhere. Maybe they probably weren't the best team in the AFC last year, and they were the Super Bowl team. I think you can look to, if Buffalo ended up playing Cincinnati, that Buffalo probably ends up getting to the Super Bowl and they probably end up beating the Rams, but you know, 13 seconds and all that other garbage. But the Bengals, it's funny to me that they don't get the respect necessarily, because their defense was better than people had given them credit for. The offensive line through the first 4 or 5 weeks was absolutely atrocious, and they made sweeping changes there. So that was part of the reason why there was such a time period in which they struggled. They just needed to have a little bit better cohesion. And now they have that, or at least they had that, and now they lose two offensive linemen. So I think when I saw that the line was, I think it was -6 Buffalo, I was very surprised at that. I really thought, like, you usually give 3 points to the home team. So essentially they're saying that the Bills are a 3-point favorite. I mean, I could give or take that, only because I saw what the Bills did last week and it wasn't very pretty against the Dolphins. But you could also make the argument that the Bengals wasn't that pretty against the Ravens team, who were starting Snoop Huntley. By the way, they call him Snoop Huntley. He doesn't look anything like Snoop Dogg.
Is that why they call him that?
Yeah, they said, growing up, he looked like Snoop Dogg. I'm like, I don't know about that. I don't think that's the case. But anyway, they were starting Tyler Huntley. They have no wide receivers. It was a game in which they needed a fumble at the 1-yard line to essentially beat the Baltimore Ravens. And like whatever it was, a 98 or 99 yard fumble recovery for a touchdown, Sam Hubbard. Like, that's what they needed. So I see why maybe there's a little bit of disrespect for the Bengals, because much like the Bills, they seem to play down to opponents, but when they play against good opponents, they bring their A game. So that's why I think this game is going to be close. Like, it's probably within a field goal. Like, I would not be, like, I love the Bills. I would not be betting the Bills to cover 6 or 6.5 points. I think that's too many.
Yeah.
And I believe that this is going to be, I think today's games are going to vastly outshine yesterday's game. I hope that the Bills game isn't close so that I can just say, you know what, I can actually just relax and watch the game instead of stressing out like I did last week. But I don't think that that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that. I hope you try and keep the blood pressure down, Matt, because we do have a couple more shows left before we get out of here, before the beginning of the Super Bowl. I agree with you, by the way. I did go Bengals. I think at the time I bet it was +6.5. I think that's, and then it came down to 6. It might be even less than that now, but I think when I got it, it was 6.5. So I am pleased about that. Let's get to Cowboys 49ers. Before we go, we have a couple minutes left here. Like I said, this is the matchup for me that has the most juice because of the historical aspect of Cowboys 49ers in the 80s and 90s and so on. Like, that is a part of it, but also just because I'm so fascinated to see what the chess match will be, not only with the offense and defenses on both sides, but if you want to zero in on one particular matchup, I mean, I'm very much looking forward to seeing. I'm looking forward to seeing how Dan Quinn, who is getting, like, you know, head coach interviews again, how he uses, of all people, Micah Parsons to get to Brock Purdy. Because we saw last weekend, the Dallas Cowboys put him in a variety of roles. He can lurk in the middle and coverage roles. He can rush from either side. And even when he's not getting home for actual sacks, which he does, but when he's not getting home for actual sacks, he's still laying hands on the quarterback. And we saw him do that to Tom Brady a whole ton last week and got him out of rhythm. And it happened early and often. And I mean, we know, you know, over the course of many years that the way to beat most QBs, but especially to beat Tom Brady, is to get pressure with him. I am curious to see how someone like Brock Purdy responds, because if Micah Parsons is in his face early and often, then how does Kyle Shanahan respond to that? Obviously, it's like your job is a little easier to make Purdy's life easier when his teammates are guys like Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, Debo Samuel, and of course Brandon Ayuk. Like, don't get me wrong, your job is a little bit easier when those are the weapons you have to play with. But Brock Purdy's also a rookie. Like, he started slow against the Seahawks as well, and he got it together, and it ended up being a blowout win. But I have a feeling that's not going to be the case with the Cowboys defense. And the Cowboys themselves are one of those really Jekyll and Hyde teams, right? Right, man? Like they look unbeatable when they are good, and they look absolutely abysmal when they are bad. Like there's the 40-3 win over the Vikings, and then there's like the Dak Prescott pick six to the Jaguars to like lose the game essentially.
Yeah, and that is the Jekyll and Hyde nature of the Cowboys. You're 100% right. I'm very, very intrigued by that matchup that you mentioned, Parsons and Purdy, only because, listen, Kyle Shanahan, when it comes to scheming offensively, he is brilliant. And I do wonder if we see a lot of Deebo Samuel in this game, only because, like, he is the yak monster, the yards after catch monster. And of course, last week after I said that, you know, his draft capital is not going to be very high, he goes out and has a monster day. So shut up, Matt. You're an idiot. And so I'm very curious to see how this kind of works out, because Micah Parsons is incredible. And Dan Quinn, the way he uses him, like you said, is marvelous. I still think that this game is a lot more high scoring than the total would indicate. I think it was at 48 at last check. Like, I could see both teams putting up 28 points here, because as good as the Niners front seven has been, their secondary has been susceptible to giving up big plays. Like, they've given up points. There's no question. And Dallas's secondary, everybody's like, oh, they got all these ball hawks on there. And, you know, Diggs is so good, and he's a great interceptor of the ball. There are also guys that overcommit to that and make mistakes. And that's where I think that there's going to be a lot more points scored in this one. I do think that this is going to be one of the better games that we see all year, only because I love offense. I do think that there's going to be mistakes made on both sides. Like, I would not be stunned if both Brock Purdy and Dak Prescott threw interceptions today, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they both threw 3+ touchdowns today. Like, it could be one of those games, and it does have the feeling like it's going to be last score wins between these two teams. I think today is going to be a great day of football.
Yeah, I am taking the over when it comes to Cowboys 49ers. I think too, when you look at the defense of the 49ers, the run defense the whole defense overall is one of the best defenses, not just alive in the playoffs, but probably just overall in the entire NFL. They have shown they're one of the more disruptive, lethal units from top to bottom. But they are, I think, still a pass funnel defense, right? Like, the rush defense is so good that you would imagine, when you look at what's the best way to attack them, you look at like Jimmy Ward, for example, who's one of their safeties. That guy has given up more, I think it's like more targets, receptions, receiving yards, touchdowns, etc., through the air than like any other safety in the NFL, and he starts for them on a regular basis. So it does make you wonder. We've seen a lot this year of Dak Prescott, and this was a case in which it eternally annoyed me in fantasy this season. Dak Prescott just did not have the greatest season, not because he sucked, but because he just didn't throw the ball a lot. He's a super aggressive QB, but it was tempered by the fact that he could get a lot of production out of Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott. I'm sure they will run the ball still, because if you have talents like that, you pretty much have to, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Dak, and he had a very good game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last week on Monday. So if he's asked to throw the ball more, I have a feeling that CeeDee Lamb will be a primary beneficiary, obviously because he is their number one wide receiver. But just in terms of small, short passes, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him approach the double-digit reception mark, just because he is their main guy. And, of course, Dalton Schultz, who they love in the red zone. But, boy, the Dak Prescott passing offense is probably going to be how they win today. It's not going to be on the backs of a Tony Pollard or Ezekiel Elliott. As much as I love watching those guys, it's pass funnel defense for the 49ers is how the Cowboys win today.
Yeah, I think I don't think it's Tony Pollard the runner. I think it's Tony Pollard the pass catcher.
Sure.
Today.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, because if you are trying to mitigate an aggressive pass rush, what better way to do that than run screens? And not for anything, there are very few players that I'd rather have running those types of plays than Tony Pollard right now. Like, it's not a long list. Like, there's your obvious ones, like your Saquon Barkley's, your Christian McCaffrey's, you know, guys like that. But Tony Pollard's been great, so I it's going to be fun today. I'm really looking forward to today's slate of games, specifically the first one, and the Bills better win, or we're going to have some problems.
Yes, I for the sake of this show next week, I am hoping the Bills win. Matt, good luck to your Bills. Good luck to your betting card this week. For Matt Marchese, for Austin, I was going to say Austin Eckler. For Austin, for Austin Mackey, they don't look similar, but for Austin Mackey, I'm Sho Ali. Thanks for listening to The Fantasy Show. We're back next weekend, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern. Inside the Lines is next. Again, you've been listening to The Fantasy Show. Thanks for being alongside us across the Sportsnet Radio Network.